to have at least.
Yeah.
Get rid of silence. Mr. Bagheera says that there is a particular journey, a particular experience that begins with this week's parsha. You may know what it is? A particular type of experience described in the Mishnah Berurah.
Oh,
all
right.
Yeah? I could give you a hint, but I'll give it away. Right. What parsha is this week? What begins this week? What begins this week? Okay, Jewish people. But we don't know that. That's going to be true by the end of the parsha.
Self-introspection.
What else begins this week?
Monotheism.
Jewish people, pardon?
Monotheism.
Well, that's an interesting question. You'd be hard for us to suggest that didn't exist in the past. No, he may have been a lone soldier on that topic. No, second, yeah?
Finding who you are, what your purpose in life.
Oh, that's true with every human being. Yeah? Pardon? Sadly, this is the first war. You could debate that. It's certainly the first war described in the Torah. This is the first instance specifically that Hashem tells a Jew to go to Eretz Israel. So this is really the beginning of the journey and the relationship between the Jewish people and Eretz Israel. And something even more interesting. I'll give you a hint. The Mishnah says there were 10 of these. Avram experienced 10 of these.
First time.
Oh. Okay. So you just... You just made an assumption, right? What assumption did you make? Pardon?
An assumption that I made was that you were talking about the test.
Well, no, we're talking about...
That leaving the land is a test.
Okay. There's an assumption you can put in that.
That no, it wasn't tested.
No, but this could be just the test of Avram. No, you're making an assumption that when the Mishnah talks about class, Avram is your note. Avram, that the concept of Nisayon means test. We're going to have to understand that. The Mishnah, by the way, does not tell us clearly what all those tests, 10 tests are. And it's interesting that as you get deeper into the list of the 10 Nisayonot of Avram, some of it is very unclear. I'll give you an example. What's the 10th Nisayon? And that's what everybody will say. And they'll be right. The Rambam says that, even Rashi alludes to that, except for the fact that there are many sources in the Chazal that suggest that one of the tests was Avram's attempt to bury Sarah. That Avram is this wealthy individual, that he's a Nasi Haaretz, he's a prince, and he can't even figure out a way to get his wife buried. And that's difficult. By the way, it's interesting. What happens in Chayasara that's unique? What happens in Parsha Chayasara when Avram buries Sarah? It's the first instance of?
Buying father and not
leaving. It's the first instance where a Jew actually acquires a portion of Eretz Yisrael. So there are many who suggest that that's an Yisrael. It's not so clear what the Asara and Yisrael are, even though Chazal do say that the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, is the last in Yisrael. The only one that everybody agrees on is that the first Nisayim is Lach. It's always interesting, Rabbanim always talk about Nisayim when they get to the Akedah. But they don't talk about it in Parshat Lach Lecha. But Parshat Lach Lecha is really where the journey of Nisayim begins. Which raises an obvious question, which is... Pardon? What is Nisayim? What is Nisayim? So I was thinking today, if you could think of an example of Nisayim. Experience. I was trying to think, what would I think was a Nisayon? You know, I mean, by definition, if you're older, you have more Nisayonot, right? Everybody has their Nisayonot. So I'll give you one example, right? We could sit for a whole day, and this is just me, any adult, I'm sure. We ask my mother, she could give you a long list of Nisayonot. I would be willing to venture I was one of them, but at least at a certain age. But I remember when I was in Bad Echad, in Razanov's course, they took us. Well, that's why I have students. They're technically, they can show you how to put it on silent. They're good at that, right? That's why I have teenagers. They tell me how to work my phone. There was a legend about this. And when you went into officer's course, you already knew that this was out there somewhere. And the stories people told you about it were so terrifying. By the time you actually got to it, I was so terrified of this thing that I couldn't imagine how I was going to get through it, even though I didn't know what it was yet. So there's an obstacle course, and it's called the Sun Tema, which literally means a freak of nature. They still put officers through it. My son-in-law went through officer's course, and he went through the same thing. It's basically an obstacle course where you run, I forget what it is, 3 kilometers, 5 kilometers, I forget, and when you get to the end of the obstacle course, right, so you have to wade through, when you get to the end of this run, right, you're in all your gear with your phone and everything else, you have to wade through a river, and the river goes up to your neck, you have to lift up your gun. When you come out of the river, then you actually start the obstacle course. Part of the obstacle course is that you have to climb a 6-meter rope, right? And you're soaking wet, and you're being timed. If you don't do this in under a certain amount of time, you have to do the whole thing again. Lots of people have to do it again and again. There was one big Nebuch guy who really, I think, like 7 times, giving a really lie, have to go back and do it. Don't know what ended up happening. Anyway, the first time you do this, you do it a whole bunch of times in practice. They walk you through it, they show you how to do each piece, because the whole idea is to teach you how to get over obstacles, because, of course, this is going to happen all the time that you're in the middle of Lebanon, and you have to get somewhere, there's a 6-meter rope there, and you're going to never figure that one out. But that's what you have to do, right? Now, most of the obstacle course is no problem. Right? Everybody had their thing that they had difficulty with. Like, there was this wall. It was like a 2-meter wall, 2.5-meter wall, whatever it is, like, you know, about the height of the ceiling. You had to run at this wall, and if you ran at it just right, you leap onto it and leap over it. And for some reason, that one wasn't the problem, right? Some guys had difficulty with that. The one that I had the most difficulty with was the 6-meter rope. For the life of me, getting up this 6-meter rope in the amount of time I needed to get up it so that I could finish the course on time to graduate officers, again and again and again, I couldn't do it. And after the third or fourth time, you know, it's like you're stuck locked in something, a bathroom, you just can't get the door up, eventually you just start to get frustrated. Unbelievably depressing, right? And every time we went through the Avesh, you know, went through you do it again, the week before the Asotema, they run you through this, you know, 2-3 times a day. Exhausting and terrified anew each time you have to do it. The run and the river and everything else. And then they finally get to the day. Can you do me a favor and do some crowd control out there? Be a mitzvah, right? Shalom Aleichem.
Whoa.
Okay, now you're going to get mad at me. What? You're going to get mad at me. I'm warning you, you're going to get mad at me.
Why?
But
it's Zephyr's fault.
I have to say this. It cannot be. One of your rabbis walks into the room and you all just sit down. It can't be. Now you can sit down. No, Baruch Hashem. I told you, give at me.
I said, the presence of Hashem is a weird thing.
Listen, you give us an opportunity to teach Allah, right? So anyway, so the day of the Asong Teva comes, right? And I'm standing there, and I just can't imagine how I'm going to get through this. And I can't even, like, now it just sounds like an anecdote. I can't even begin to describe the depression that you feel when you have this whole thing ahead of you, and you just can't imagine, you haven't been able to get up this road. And there was a madach there, a katzin, who was one of our officers teaching us anything about officers, of course, and he had obviously walked me, you know, and they kind of go along, eventually they root you along, and he had been, you know, he was the one that found the road, come on, you can do it, you know, don't give up, whatever. He tried, it didn't work. And then, this day, he comes over to me, right? And, you know, you're standing at, like, the start line, and they're about to let, you know, yell, you know, go. Like, each group gets marked, and every 30 or 60 seconds, another group sets out, whatever. And he's about to do the chapra. And just before he gives you the chapra, he comes over to me and goes, "In tiltzu, in zolagada." Now, that's a line from Theodore Herzl. If you will it, it is no dream. And that was Herzl's line. People thought he was out of his mind, the dream of the state of Israel. He said, if you will something, if you really have a ratzon for something, anything is possible. And somehow, I don't know why, that line just inspired me. And I got up the rope. I still don't know how I got up the rope. I'm sure I couldn't do it again today. Got up the rope. For me, that was a nisayon. And what's interesting to me is that every aspect of that experience was a nisayon. So now we need to understand the concept of a nisayon. Okay? What is a nisayon? How does a nisayon work? And I'll give you an example. The Gemara, I think it's Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin, has an interesting anecdote, an agarta, about David HaMelech. David Amal says to Kosh Baruch Hu, right? It says in the beginning of Shemesh, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Hashem is the God of Avraham, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov. Le'ayni Elokei David. Why does it say Elokei David? How come it says that you're the, you know, all the Jews get to say you're the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and they don't get to say you're the God of David? Very strange question. But okay, David Amal. So Kosh Baruch Hu answers in the Gemara, because them I tested. Again, we're assuming the word Messiah is a test. We'll go with that for now, right? And you ain't the test. So David HaMelech says, come and ask me. So test me. Miyad, says the Gemara, right? Vayishma David, and then it repeats sort of the story from Sefer Shmuel. What's the famous test of David HaMelech that he fails? Pardon? No. He's sitting in his palace. He hears a noise up on the roof. He goes up on the roof, and he sees Bathsheba bathing in the nude. He's smitten with her. It's a more complicated story. I'm oversimplifying it, whatever it may be. A lot of questions there. What's Bathsheba doing on the roof? We're not going to go there, right? Don't get involved. The Gemara says, Bathsheba. David wants Bathsheba, but Bathsheba's married, so he sends Uriah Hiti up to the front lines. And Uriah Hiti gets killed. Once he gets killed, she's a war hero. Right? The Gemara says on the one hand, Kol Omer David Melech Chatarin Elato. If you really think that technically Allah, David HaMelech, did a chait that he transgressed, you're mistaken. Technically he was allowed to do this. He's allowed to order anybody sent to the front lines that he wants. And if somebody's killed in the front line, it's not his fault. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if the person is killed, so then she's a war widow. She's a war widow. He's responsible for her. He can marry her. Anybody. But not David HaMelech. Not the author of Tehillim. Can't be. Okay. So he fails. And that's the end of the story. The end of that story. First of all, what's David's issue? Why does David feel a need? I mean, David HaMelech. Now, granted, Moshe is the one who represents Anava, but, you know, humility, but I want my name up in the lights? That doesn't make sense. Second of all, why is the reason that a person's name is up in lights, that he's respected by the Jewish people, etc., etc., because he went through a Nisayon? What does Nisayon have to do with that? And third of all, if this is the whole point, so how come David fails? I mean, why does Hashem test him if Hashem knows he's going to fail? Does he fail? It's an interesting question. And what is the concept of Nisayon? And most important of all, why does this concept of Nisayon begin the entire story of the Jewish people? So that's one question. I want to understand the concept of Nisayon. I want to understand how it works. What, by the way, is the obvious theological question of a Nisayon? Let's assume it's a test.
If God knows what the result is going to be, why even give it?
Jump back. Agree? Well, you're going to start tuning up, yeah? Right? What on earth is the purpose of these tests? Why does Hashem give me an Asan Tema so that he can see if I'm going to pass? He either knows I'm not going to pass, like by David HaMelech, or he knows I am going to pass. So what's the point? That's first of all. And second of all, how is this process, and by the way, this is not just about the beginning of the journey of Avraham Avinu, because what this means, if Avraham Avinu represents the beginning of the Jewish people, then every experience that Avraham Avinu has is an integral part of what Judaism is all about. And by the way, if Judaism, and this would take us far afield, but if Judaism is, I mean, there was an article in the Jerusalem Post this week by Caroline Glick. Anybody know Caroline Glick? She writes the Post. She knows, by the way, I try every day, when I finish the paper at night, whatever, I bring it in, and I do that the next day, and I leave it outside the office. It sits there for a day or two. If you don't take it, I throw it out. So if you ever hear it out in the hall, there's a Jerusalem Post, you're welcome to take it back to the dorms. After a day here, it'll get thrown out. Anyway, there's an article by Caroline Glick, and there's a lot of data going around about assimilation. There was a report that came out called the Pew Report. It's the first comprehensive report on the American Jewish community in the last 10, 12 years. They discovered, this is a shocker, that 57%+ of the American Jewish community is assimilating, is intermarrying. If you take the Orthodox quotient, whatever that means, out of the equation according to this report, you get 78%. And if you add, by the way, those Jews who are actually married to other Jews but who don't define themselves as Jewish, you're way above 80%. And that's the average. That means that the statistical probability, right, if you bring up your children in America, that they will actually marry Jews, or at least that their children will marry Jews, it's pretty low. Especially if you're not Orthodox, whatever Orthodox means. So that's very challenging. So Caroline Gluck wrote this article, which is a good question. It's funny because there was no chiddush in there. No, that was two parts ago. We talk about this all the time. But she asked a very good question. She says, everybody's all concerned because the Jews are disappearing. But why do you need to be Jewish? Why be Jewish? Why do we need Jews? Why do we need Judaism? So we're going to spend a whole year exploring that topic. We're going to get a little deeper into that tonight at 9:15. But what do you think? Why do we need Jews? Spending a whole year here, what does Judaism mean to me? How am I connected with Jews? Do I want to be Jewish? Why do you need Jews? What do you think?
Role model.
Okay.
What?
Okay. Yeah?
Role model.
Right? You have to say it louder.
Role model.
Right.
Role model.
Right? So one of the promises that Hashem gives Abraham, v'nivrchu v'chakol mishpachot adamah, the whole world will be best through you. The Jewish people are meant to be, like Yeshayahu says in Or LaGalim, we're supposed to be a model for the world. So therefore, anything that's an integral part of the Jewish people is really an integral part of what humanity and how humanity is supposed to be. At least you could make that case. So that really challenges us to understand the concept of Nisayon. What's a Nisayon? Psh, whoa! You're killing me! I want to give you a hug. I can't reach you.
Okay.
How are you doing? How long are you in the hood?
You
want some pizza?
I'm here.
Ellie Janae, have some pizza. This is Ellie Janae. Ellie Janae was a Talmud here 2 years ago? Or last year?
Two years.
You never stopped. A lifetime ago. Never stopped. That's right. That's right. Baruch Hashem. Now he's in 17. So good to see you. Sadiq. Why? The Atar Sadiq Tovar Ad Shamayim. You understand? Kill me. I can't give you. You can't speak before I give you a hug. Deal? So what? I want you to know, Ellie, we were just saying, like, so what is the concept of Nisayon being tested mean in walks of parish? You can't plan that better, right? So that's one question. Then there's a second question, which I actually spoke about to the Oraita guys last year on this parasha, but it's worth repeating. Why does Hashem tell Abraham to go, to do all this? Lech lecha, me'artzecha, me'malarcha, me'artzecha, me'artzecha, leave everything behind, go to the land, you're going to see. Why is Hashem telling us the news? What do you think?
You're
going
to be starting something, you're going to leave everything behind.
Pardon?
You're going to be starting something new, you're going to leave everything else behind.
But what motivates Avram to do this? I mean, he's got to leave everything behind. Pardon?
What motivates Avram?
Yeah. It's actually not a trick question, it's very simple.
God told him.
Just because it's true that should be it, but that doesn't seem to be shot in the Torah. Somebody proved to me that Jason's incorrect. You're right. I want you to understand you're right. Now that we said you're right, you are right. Now we can say you're wrong. Later we'll figure out why you're right. It's very simple. It's like one of the first Rashi's in Lech Lecha.
God promised that he would be wealthy.
Ah! This is unbelievable. Lech Lecha Me'atzcha Lecha B'Tavicha. Leave behind your land, your country, everything. Escha L'Goy Gadol. I'm going to make you famous. I'm going to make you wealthy. I'm going to give you progeny. Abraham is 75 years old. He has no children. He's a nebuch. He's mamash a nebuch. He's not only a nebuch, he's a fruit loop nebuch. They think he's nuts. He keeps telling people, no, God's there. You just can't see him. And they say, yeah, okay. Just take your idol out and stop talking, right? Nebuch, terachma. You know, get him, end of parashat Noach. Right? Does anybody notice this? Terach leaves to head to Canaan. Anybody notice that? Terach really begins the journey. You want to know why Terach began the journey? Because Nebuch, he can't work. Nobody wants to talk to him because his son's nuts. That's not shot. But okay. So what's going on here? Listen to what Rashi says. This is an unbelievable Rashi. Anybody want to quote me the Rashi about Ben? Anybody? By the way, you should know, you will do better if you bring a chumash to this class. You don't have to. You will do this. It doesn't just say lech. It says lech lecha. Do you ever wonder what lecha means? Go to you. So Rashi says, no, for you. L'tovatcha u'lanatcha. Do this for your own benefit. For your own pleasure. Avram is promised three things. He's promised wealth, he's promised fame, he's promised progeny. And as a matter of fact, this parsha then makes a serious attempt to fulfill all of those three promises. Avram gets there to Israel, he experiences famine, he goes down to Egypt, he comes back wealthy. Right? He comes back wealthy. That's first of all. Second of all, once he gets to know fame and fortune, etc., he achieves fame. And certainly, next parsha, when he fights the five kings.
That's this
part. Is it this part, right? So he fights the five kings, become famous, right? And third, he gets promised Ishmael. And next, he gets promised Yitzchak, right? So I don't understand. What's the big deal? I mean, listen, we could talk about Kishbar. Somebody want to do a mitzvah? Just go out and tell them that we're hearing this and we're in the middle of shiur.
You close the window.
No, we shouldn't have to close the window. We should go. They're trying to educate some, you know, a couple of boys. Right? So. This is a big deal. I mean, we could debate whether Hashem exists. But if Hashem exists, and Hashem came to you, Hashem said to you, listen, I want you to go on a journey. I'm not going to tell you where. But I will make you wealthy. I will make you famous. I will give you children. You wouldn't go? Sure, you would go. So why is this in the sun? What's the big deal? How do these two things fit? Yeah.
Rosh Hashanah, that the
Rosh Hashanah, yeah?
That Hashem can give you everything he wants anyway. So the fact that Abraham had tonight say, even though Hashem can give it to me right here, without me being able to do all these things, but he's making me go somewhere else in order to do that.
It's true what you say, and far be it from me to question of Moshe Feinstein. But having said that, it's legitimate to look at different Perushim and to say, okay, you know, sometimes you have a question, and you see what the Malbim says, you see what the Abarban El says, you see what the Ramban says, you see what Rashi says, and they don't speak to you. It doesn't mean Chasham, they're wrong. You have to find the Perush that speaks to you. I don't know. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu came to me and he said, if you go, I don't know, to Tel Aviv, and you start a yeshiva, right? You know what? If you go to Arizona, you start a yeshiva in Arizona. Now, don't get me wrong. I'd be a little crazy to start a yeshiva in Arizona. But if I really believe Hashem was telling me to do that, and Mamash Hashem came and said, like, I don't believe you can prove Hashem exists. I believe you can know Hashem exists, but I'm not sure you can prove Hashem exists. But Hashem could prove Hashem exists. So let's say Hashem proves Hashem exists. He comes and he sits on the table right here and says, Bing, I know you're having a good time. I know this is great. You love being here. But you know what? I need you in Phoenix. Go to Phoenix, start a yeshiva. So, okay, I'm not saying it'll be easy for me. But then he says, but I'll tell you what. There's a guy there, and he wants to give you $5,000. He'll never have to fundraise again. And there's 100 guys who just are thirsty for Torah, and they're all waiting for you in Phoenix. And there's three... There's three unbelievable people who are meant to be the shidduchim for your three children that are married, and they're also in Phoenix. So I wouldn't go to Phoenix. I wouldn't understand it, but I'd go to Phoenix. I'd book a plane. If you really knew Hashem was talking to you, you'd book a plane. So put aside for the moment the question of how you know Hashem was talking to you, whether that's so simple. What's really going on here? So I'll share with you an idea, which I really think is probably one of the most critical ideas out there. Understanding the concept of Nisayon is a critical idea. How does a Nisayon work? Right? The Sfat Emet, okay? Otherwise known as the Sfas Emes, okay? Quotes this concept. He quotes the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. I think it's in Pirkei. Asara Nisayonot Nidnaseavra. Avram was Nisayoned with 10 Nisayonot. Lehudia Kama Chibato. To let us know how much Hashem loves Avram. Now this is interesting. According to the Sfat Emet, the Ger Rebbe, The idea of a Nisayon is that it makes known, not me, but my relationship with Hashem. So I don't know about you. I mean, because Hashem is testing me, I feel loved. That's a little weird. We need to understand that. Ki al yedei nisayon mit'aleh ha'adam le'madrega elyona. Because through the concept of nisayon, a person is elevated to a higher level, as the Sazama says. Ki nasehu lashon harama. The word nes, right, appears in the Torah as a banner, right? Ki nes al-harim, right, the banner held high. A nes somehow makes high, makes known something. Now the Ramban has a fascinating comment on the Akedah. If you look at the story of Akedat Yitzchak, at the end of the whole story, right, Hashem tells Avraham, you know, take your son, your only son, Kachet Yitzchak, Yitzchak, Rafta Yitzchak, Valeo Sham Lalao, for a month. We'll talk about this when we get to Parshat Vayera. But at the end of that story, Hashem has an unbelievable line. He says, Atayadati, Atay with an I now, Atayadati ki reelu kimata, ki lo chasachta tichat yichitcha mimen. Now I know that you are Yareelukim. Now put aside the moment what Yareelukim is, in awe of Hashem, where of Hashem. But now I know. Now I know you're great, because you didn't hold back your only son. Ask me an obvious question. Obvious question, Alberto.
Didn't you always know?
Yeah, how can Hashem now know? That phrase cannot be in relationship to Hashem. So there are a lot of different responses to give to this. The Ramban says, Al tikri yadati, right, as an adverb, but yod hodati, I yadad, I made known. Now I have made it clear. Now I have made known that which I always knew. Now put aside for the moment how the Ramban does that linguistically. What the Ramban is really saying is that Avram always had the potential to succeed in the binding of Isaac. But he hadn't yet realized that potential because he hadn't done it. Now, what's interesting, and you know, I guess the Asan Tav is as good an example as anything. Before I finally succeeded in climbing that rope, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that I was going to succeed in climbing the rope. Agreed? I did not know that I was going to succeed in climbing the rope. But Hashem knows that I have the capability of climbing that rope. How does Hashem know? Because Hashem knows I'm good at climbing the rope. So the value of climbing the rope is not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem already knows that. The value of climbing the rope is for me. I need to discover that I can climb the rope. Now, what's fascinating about this is when I climb the rope, when I succeed in climbing the rope, I'm not quite the same person that I was before. I'm now the rope climber. And that's a slightly different person. Go back to the story of David HaMelech. What is David HaMelech really asking? When he says, it says, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. What does that mean? How come it doesn't say Elokei David? So Rav Dessler in Michtav Meliyahu has a fascinating idea. He says there are four basic ideas, four basic energies that needed to come into the world. And each of these four individuals, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David, have to take care of everybody. Am I going to see you later?
Yeah.
Awesome. I got to get the hug. So good to see you. Right? All these four energies need to come into the world. And the reason that we're able to say, okay, Avraham, is because Avraham succeeded in bringing the energy that he was meant to bring into the world. What's the energy that Avraham has to bring into the world? Which is
chesed,
right? Avraham was the paragon of loving kindness, of giving. That's interesting what that means. Altruistically giving. Chesed. Yitzchak is a very different energy to bring into the world. What's the energy Yitzchak brings into the world?
Judgment.
Pardon?
Judgment.
No. Gvura. Gvura is almost the antithesis. If loving kindness of chesed is outward energy, gvura is internal energy. If chesed is everything comes out flowing. Gvura is everything comes out. Avram is the okayed, the binder. Yitzchak is the nekad, the bound. Avram is constantly active. He's fighting wars. He's digging wells. He's taking journeys. As soon as he gets to Israel, halach v'nasor ha-negba, back and forth, up, down to Mitzrayim. All this energy. Yitzchak? What does Yitzchak do? In fact, the only thing Yitzchak really does is he digs wells, but he digs the exact wells that his father dug. Yitzchak is all about receiving, whereas Avraham is all about doing and giving. And you need both. You need to know when to act and to do, and you need to know when to withhold, to receive. Those are two different energies. What's Yaakov? Yaakov is Tiferet. Yaakov is actually the synthesis of those two. In fact, that's why it's Yaakov that succeeds in finally creating the Jewish family that will be the Jewish people. Avraham has two sons. One of them disappears. So at the end of the day, from a Jewish perspective, when Avram's gone, there's only Yitzchak. You start with one Jew, you end with one Jew. He hasn't built anything yet. Yitzchak also has two sons, Yaakov and Esav. One of them disappears. So when Yaakov dies, there's still only one Jew. Yaakov, on the other hand, Yaakov has 12 sons. Yaakov creates something. And that will become the Shvatim, the Bukam Etzel. Why? Because Yaakov synthesizes Chesed and Gvura. So they bring in those three energies. What's the energy of David? Interesting. What is the energy that David has to give to bring into the world? Everybody know?
Malchut.
Now, Malchut is not yet here. It's not here on a national level. We don't have a Melech today. We're in exile. We didn't create a Malchut that lasted. And it's not here on a world level. Hashem is not considered. Vayom Ahui, Hashem Echad Nishmo Echad. Right? One day Hashem will be Melech. We're not there yet. Now, why do Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov succeed in bringing this energy into the world? And why does David not succeed in bringing this energy into the world? And now it gets deep. Because Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov succeed in experiencing Nisayon, succeeding in Nisayon, and elevating themselves to where they could be. David, now, far be it from us to criticize David HaMelech. But in order to do this, we have to understand the Gemara. The Gemara can criticize David HaMelech. So the Gemara says David HaMelech did not succeed in his Nisayon. Now that's very difficult. David wants to be tested. He's willing to sacrifice. He's willing to struggle. And Hashem says, I'm going to give you a Nisayon. Is David HaMelech capable of passing that Nisayon? No. Obviously not, because he fails it. Does Hashem know David HaMelech is going to fail it? Obviously. So Hashem gives David a Nisayon that he knows he's going to fail. What's the value in that? So now it gets deep. Now it gets deep, yeah.
When you say that David wasn't capable of passing the test, are you implying that it was that based on who he was, he wasn't able to do it?
David HaMelech, in that moment, if you took all the components of his psychology and his physiology and how beautiful Bathsheba was, all the things, you put them all together, the recipe of that is this one works.
So then,
this can't work.
I mean, doesn't the idea of free will mean that in any situation we might be disposed to...
Now that's a very interesting question. Since Hashem knows what's going to be, then how is there free will? That's a good children question. I would love to get the question. I just want to make sure I finish this topic. That's not a 2-minute question. If I finish the topic and we still have a few minutes, then that's an excellent question. I'll tell you where I'm at on that question. I'm not sure you can answer that question, but I'll tell you where I'm at on that question. But let's assume for the moment that Hashem gives David Melech and Nisayon. How do we know he cannot pass? Because it's nothing. Yeah?
What task did Yitzchak
do? Oh, that's a very good question. One opinion is that Yitzchak's Nisayon was to be the Ne'akad. Yitzchak, listen, think about this. Nobody thinks about Yitzchak. Avram comes to you, he says, I heard a voice from you. Maybe he doesn't tell him anything. He just says, come. We're going on a journey. Now, I don't know about you, but if my dad said to me, I'm close to my parents, brothers, and my dad said to me, come on, we gotta go on a trip. I'd say, oh, okay, well, where are you gonna go? Doesn't matter, come. Well, how long are we going for? No, don't worry about it. We're just going. Okay. Now, we don't know, maybe there was dialogue, but the Torah doesn't tell us. Then they go, and they've obviously bought a land. Now, what do you do with a land 4,000 years ago? You shecht it. But, you know, what's the problem? Yitzchak notices there's no lamb. And they're going somewhere. Somehow Yitzchak knows they're going to offer something. Maybe because they're going to Yerushalayim, maybe because they're going to Har Moriah, maybe because that's the custom. So finally, Yitzchak says, Hinei Aish V'Aitzi, I see you got a flint. I see you got wood. I guess the type of wood you bring, you know, it's like imagine that we're all going on a road trip. And we get in a big van, and I have you load up, you know, barbecues and coals, right? Everything's there for the barbecue. And we get in the car, we're going on the journey. Yeah, we have a whole day, whatever we get, you know, we're driving. And then, like, it's 5, it's 6, you know, we're getting to the campsite. And you get to this campsite, it's just this big empty patch of dirt. Just a, you know, random thought, right? What would you eventually say? Well, okay, we got the barbecue, we got the coals. What's missing? Where's the meat? Right? This was all planned so that you would appreciate this moment. Right? So Yitzchak asked him. So what does Hashem, what does Avram say? Elohim elos asel elavani. And the Chazal do a play of words. Elohim yirae asel elava. Hashem will show you the lamb, comma, my son. You're going to be the lamb. Now Yitzchak's got it. Something's going on. By the way, Yitzchak lives in a time when child sacrifice is the norm. So it's hard to know what Yitzchak is thinking. It doesn't say. He just keeps going. Now, this far, we could say, well, you know, he thinks this is it. Then they get up to Har Moriah. Now, Avram Avinu is like 130 years old. He takes his son, and he says, Shvu lachem poim mechamor, you guys stay here. We'll just go to two of us. He says, come on, lie down. There's no conflict. So Yitzchak lies down. And he takes the rope, and he ties him up. And Yitzchak just lies there. And he lifts up the knife. You never see that Yitzchak struggles. Yitzchak is the ultimate passive acceptor of the will of Hashem. Now that's easy to say. That's very hard to do. And by the way, that's one of the essential lessons that we learn from Yitzchak. Sometimes you have to be Avraham. And sometimes you have to be Yitzchak. Right? So I don't know, you ambush with 3 terrorists behind the hill. You gotta be Avraham. You just sit there and pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You gotta set up your cover fire, and you gotta do you gotta get close, and you gotta charge up the hill. You gotta do your Avraham, but you know what? At a certain point, you also need Yitzchak. At a certain point, you can do your running, but you have to know whether you get to the top of the hill has nothing to do with you. You're in the hands of something bigger than you, because Baruch is gonna decide. So while you're Avraham, you're also Yitzchak. And that's Yaakov, by the way. So they have their Nisayon, and it somehow elevates them. So what's going on with David HaMelech? So I want to tell you an unbelievable story. This is an unbelievable story. You will either love this story or you will hate this story. I struggle with this story, and it's completely irrelevant to me whether this story actually happened. If it didn't, it should have. There's a magnificent book. It's called Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. It was written by a woman named Yaffa Eliach, who was on the board of the President's Commission for the Holocaust Museum in Washington. She did a doctoral thesis on at Brooklyn College on the Holocaust. And for this thesis, she interviewed hundreds of Holocaust survivors. Brooklyn is one of the probably the greatest populations of Holocaust survivors in the world. And she interviewed hundreds of them.